Welcome to episode 10.
Episode 10 of the Digital Press Podcast. We made it.
The milestone.
Yes. This is a big deal. In fact, it's such a big deal that we brought in our friends from the Punch Stevenson Show.
Woo!
Welcome. Welcome, everyone. Yeah. Oh, let's roll call first, for those of you who may have forgotten who we are.
I'm Mike.
I'm Frankie.
Rob.
Greg.
And this is the Digital Press Podcast, episode 10. And a lot of stuff has happened since the last time we did a welcome back episode. This is our third welcome back episode. We only take breaks of 3 months or so between episodes.
Well, it's quarterly.
Yeah, so things can happen. We have to let things simmer in the gaming world. We work it out that way. But Sony announced the PlayStation 4. That is probably the biggest news to happen. If we had waited any longer to do another episode, they might have been announcing the PlayStation 5. But...
Or that they're out of business.
If you believe everything that you read on the internet, Sony's going to be throwing in the towel sometime between now and releasing the PlayStation 4. They're just going to give up. They're like, you know what? We did that whole thing in New York. We announced it, but...
April Fools.
Yeah, we're not really good at this whole video game thing. People don't like us. We're quitting. Bye.
Well, they didn't physically have the console there.
Let's put this into context. They just announced
the controller.
They showed the controller and they announced the inner workings.
That's the secret, though. The console's in the controller. The discs are going to be really
a digital press podcast.
Mini. They're going back to mini discs.
That's an exclusive. We have the scoop.
We knew that Sony had something in mind for those mini discs. They didn't really retire them. But no,
I had mini discs. I had a mini disc recorder.
Don't knock the mini discs. Sony is great at making formats
that are
failures in the commercial market. I mean, and this is not counting PlayStation, but...
Or Blu-ray.
Or Blu-ray. Blu-ray is definitely a legit success. Beta and mini discs are absolutely... They were industry standards from a production standpoint for years. Mini discs were used in professional recording capacity, and Beta, like every television studio that recorded on video, used Betamax for...
I think Minidisc might have been slightly more popular in like England than over here, but...
I think I remember seeing stuff released
maybe
on
not
there
much.
When I was there.
I have it.
Maybe not much. I'm looking at...
If it's weird and doesn't come from the United States, Mike has it. So Sony announced they did a big press conference and it was in New York, and they brought out what I thought was the coolest was they brought out Mark Cerny, and those of us in the classic gaming community know him as the guy who created Marble Madness. When he was 18, he programmed Marble Madness, and Atari produced that as one of the great classic arcade games that still holds up incredibly well. I mean, it's got the track. One of the best use of trackballs in classic arcade games. So this guy came out, and some of the first things he said were, you know, without admitting, or without just saying straightforward that, like, look, we get that the PlayStation 3 was an incredibly difficult piece of hardware for developers to make games for. That was one of the biggest complaints that the industry typically had. It was like, you know, the cell processors are obtuse, they're challenging to produce games for, we have to learn an entirely new programming structure, we have to buy your development kit, and it's, you know, and I mean...
Plus the bottlenecks.
And a Blu-ray drive, that was something new.
So it was like the Saturn.
It was a Saturn, I mean, in its way, but Cerny came out and he said, the PS4 is going to use totally, practically off-the-shelf PC development tool kit, you know,
AMD chips, architecture, and industry standard.
8 gigs of RAM. That's the thing that jumped out at me. That's 16 times more than the PS3.
Well, they got it. They have to think longevity with these console cycles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we know how RAM works. Like in 1 year, things change exponentially.
Yeah.
You know, and prices drop too. So you know. PC manufacturers can input some.
I remember when 1 megabyte of RAM in 1992 cost $60.
Oh, ThinkGeek
megabyte
published on Facebook last week a print ad from Best Buy or some national retailer from 1998 of like USB thumb drive prices and old hard drives, not even like SATA hard drives, the format before that. Like 40 gig hard drives were like $300.
Oh, yeah.
Little USB, like 256 megs were $99.
Yeah.
It was
oh, when zip disks were the rage.
And then when I went to art school, I bought a zip drive. And then when I brought all my zip disks to class, I realized that they had Zip 2.0 on their computers, and it wasn't backwards compatible. So,
of course, well, why would it be? Right?
No, of course not. You put the zip disk in, and what does it do? It just spits it back out. Like it goes, yep, and it spits it back out. There was no error message on the screen. There's nothing that said, like, hey, this isn't compatible. It's just like, fuck you. Oh, thanks.
We could curse on this one?
Yes, you can.
By the way, I don't want to get off on a tangent, but who was the guy that did Marble Madness again?
Mark Cerny.
Did you see I forget what website it is, but they do this series called Video Game Postmortem Videos.
No.
He was one of them, and they had David Crane did one. And
oh, nice.
Basically, it's guys in this auditorium, and like David Crane will get up there, or Mark Cerny, or the guy who made Pac-Man.
Sure.
And they get up there, and they go through the whole history. You know, this is how I programmed it. This is what we had to go through.
We do that at Classic Gaming Expo.
And he talked about Marble Madness, how his original concept, like Atari was saying, we're coming out with this new arcade hardware. You're going to be able to do 3D graphics on the fly. You can have a real-time deforming play field on the fly so that the marbles, like... And he's like, wow, this is awesome. And, like, every, like, 6 months or whatever, he would, like, have to totally start from scratch because Atari would come and be like, yeah, we scrapped that feature of the hardware. So that by the end, like... Mm. They originally designed a bowling ball as the trackball until they realized, like, Atari's
a bowling ball?
It actually gets sucked.
That's what they said. They said children's fingers are getting caught. So then they were going to do a motorized trackball that responded as the marble, like, went down. Like, it would fight with you.
Of course,
and then Atari's like, yeah, we're going to have to scrap that.
You know,
it was very
R&D.
Very
R&D
fascinating.
Is awesome. It's great to hear those stories and see those kind of things.
Video Game Postmortem is called. Dude, look.
Yeah, turn off our podcast.
Go on Google.
Just go listen to Video Game.
After this. So anyway, so he came out. He saw him at the PlayStation.
Oh thing. Yeah, I mean, he addressed what I consider, and I think a lot of people in the industry consider, some of the biggest criticisms of the PS3. Professional criticisms are that too hard to program for. Bad network infrastructure, the way that the CPU and the Blu-ray talk to each other, there are limitations there. And I think this time around, this is Sony meeting criticisms head on, and they put, and this is one of the coolest things, they put the US development team in charge of designing the architecture of this system. This is a big first. Like, this isn't Sony Japan calling the shots and saying, you know, the hardware is this way and that's it. You know, this is the creative, you know, not to say that Japanese Sony studios are not creative.
Well, let's be realistic that the best games are coming out of people who are pushing in from North America and Europe that are pushing the hardware in ways that the Japanese aren't.
Yeah.
So
it's not quite
as there's some good studios that.
Well, no, I'm not saying that there are. I'm not saying that there aren't good studios, but
you know. No, it's a different. It's a different set of development protocol. I think that, you know, the Japanese stuff is more structured and rigid, and the American developers. I mean, look what
they're
Microsoft.
They're high
had.
Half the time. So.
Yes.
Only at
they
a tar.
Smoke the
back
weed
in the.
Yeah.
Well, no, it's a first for a Japanese company who is very traditional and very rigid to relinquish control of, you know, we're going to let an American design our hardware.
I thought
that's a first.
32X was American design.
That's the 30. Come on, that's the 32X.
Well, maybe the PS4 is going to be the 32X of our generation.
Oh,
we don't know. If it is, when there's a Spider-Man game released, buy a lot of them and keep them in storage. Don't open them. It'll be worth something someday.
Spider-Man.
If there's one thing I know about 32X is that I should have bought all those copies of Spider-Man Web of Fire at Toys R Us when they were on sale.
You know who invented Spider-Man?
Stanley.
Steve Ditko?
Oh.
Steve Ditko and Stanley.
Yeah. Steve Ditko created him, and then Stanley took credit for him, as per...
Well, I mean, it's probably one of those things that probably work together.
Now, why did they bring out the Marble Madness guy, of all people?
Because he's the guy. He's the lead architect of the PlayStation 4 hardware.
Wow.
He was in charge of coming up with what would be the best, you know, CPU, the best chipsets... the best amount of RAM, you know, and he's the guy who's leading the charge for this being developer friendly and cost efficient and having a longevity in a long console cycle, because they've been really successful in stretching the console cycle this generation. All the companies.
Yeah.
Who would have thought that we could have subsisted for 10 years, you know, practically on this stuff?
I know.
It's necessary now. I mean, just becoming too expensive. You can't. You know, I mean, the only people
to launch at that expensive price. I mean, that in today's market, you're just shooting yourself in the foot. To release a $600 game console in the year 2013, no, you're dead. You're finished. It's suicide.
Yeah, they're not going to do that again.
No,
I think if there's one thing that's safe, no matter what happens with the hardware, because we really haven't seen the box, and that's a huge talking point for a lot of people, is that they didn't show the box. If it's big, if it's small, whatever it is not going to be $600. You can count on that.
It can't be. Well, number one, it can't be from a business perspective. But number two, that's why they're using industry standard parts and architecture.
And you know, there's probably going to be multiple versions. You know, like multiple SKUs you'll have like the. I mean, you'll have like the less
the
expensive
arcade
one.
Version, yeah, yeah, and like the pro version, and
smaller hard drive, larger hard drive.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Although they probably won't make the same mistake that was made, you know, this previous gen, where like the smaller, like the cheaper one, wasn't able to be upgraded completely.
It should be modular.
Yeah, you know what I mean. Like that was a big issue when people who were stuck with, you know, the cheaper version.
The 20 gig PS3 with no Wi-Fi?
Yeah.
Like, you're stuck.
Yeah, that's an anomaly why they did one without any ability to have any wireless internet connection. Although I say that, and I've never really used Wi-Fi on any of my modern game consoles, if you can't...
Really?
The Wii? I use it on Wii.
I use it exclusively.
Especially the Wii, I find, is... I mean, the Wii already has a bad network... speed and
I've never had a problem with the Wii.
Have you played Smash Brothers Online ever?
That's a problem with
Dr. Mario RX Online.
That's a problem with.
And I get my butt destroyed by Japanese people.
Yeah,
we're probably cheating, but.
I mean, it's just scientific. The Cat 5 cable is going to get you faster.
Yeah. Well, just like anything else, you know, it's like there's, you know, it's a plus or minus. You know, the plus is that. You know, you get better speeds. The minus is that you got to wire it up, you know?
Yeah.
Question.
Yes, sir.
Is
the... You got to raise your hand if you want to ask a question on the Digital Games podcast, and then we call on you.
All right.
Okay, Rob.
And now Frankie passes out.
I forgot what I was going to
say. Deodorant joke.
No, the...
Are you saying that Rob doesn't date?
I showered this morning. By the way, I am Rob2600 on digitpress.com.
You may have seen him accepting an Oscar last week for Argo.
What?
Beard joke.
Or you may actually have communicated with him on the forum and now seeing him in person.
Yeah, it's Rob 2600. So, all right, the PlayStation 4, the fact that they are using industry standard architecture, going with AMD, what kind of effect do you think that'll have, against the whatever the new Xbox is, or is this giving them an advantage?
We are gonna see probably a lot less of these side by side comparisons where it's like the next Xbox has this type of resolution and the PlayStation 4 has this type of resolution. There's probably gonna be all the ports are probably gonna be like identical with the exception of whatever kind of network features each one has, or whatever exclusives Sony or Microsoft pay for extra levels, extra skins, extra colors, extra whatever.
The big deal is probably going to be comparing like PlayStation and Xbox with the Wii U, is probably what's going to
well,
be about.
With
iPad.
I know with this generation, PlayStation 3, Xbox 360, some people say, well, you get one. There's so many ports between the two. Like, you know, if you have one, you're fine. Do you think now there's going to be even more ports, or are they going to go back to more exclusives?
I think, yeah, well,
I think multi-platform is becoming
it's just
becoming a necessity.
You can't afford to keep your games locked on one console.
I mean, unless you have some sort of like backroom dealing going on with, you can't really afford it.
DLC, downloadable content, sometimes they'll do it differently based on the console.
Yeah, one will have a window. And we'll probably see Windows when, you know, I think Microsoft and Sony...
Windows? Like...
Yes, they'll all run Windows. But the key
like
is...
the dream, that wait, we're going back to the Dreamcast now.
It'll be Windows...
3.1.
Yeah. It'll be Windows me.
16.
Windows 3.1, and you actually have to quit to DOS to play the game.
The command prompt. That'd be awesome.
You can go into
Windows
3.1 on your PS4 if you want to play Minesweeper or Spider Solitaire.
Commander Keen.
Yep.
Wait, this is a challenge to the hacking community out there.
He wants DOS.
Hack Windows 3.1 onto the PlayStation. If the PlayStation 3 could run Linux, PlayStation 4 has to be able to run. With 8 gigs of RAM, Windows 3.1, you have to, right?
Mike, you have a jailbroken PS3. Can you put Windows on that? Has anybody made Windows for it?
No.
Well, get on that. Come on, man.
I want to play some... I want to do Print Shop
Ski
Deluxe.
Ski Free. I want to play Print Shop. We all want to play Ski
Elf
Free,
Bowl.
Right? Ski Free.
Oh, is that what the Yeti?
The Yeti comes down, the stick figure Yeti, and eats the skier. Yeah. You can only
That's
get
awesome.
Some...
Gorilla Bass. Do you remember that?
No. What was the game
was
that was in
game,
DOS
gorillas.
That was hidden in one of the config?
Gorillas.
Oh, that was like it was like Scorched Earth where you're throwing bananas.
Yes. Yeah, it was like worms.
Yeah.
Gorilla.bats.
There was a snake
basic.
Game, wasn't there? Like a snake.
Yes.
Serpent
Nibbler.
Game. Nibbler.
Yeah, were those? Was that in Basic? There was one that was
they
also
both in
an Easter
Cube
egg base. In Microsoft Word. Like
Excel had that.
Excel
95 or something like that. It had like. Like the way the programmers used to hide, like instead of just hiding away like a list of the people who worked on the program, they hid like this game. It kind of looked like Wolfenstein. It was called like something like Hell Dungeon or something like it. I forget what it was called, but it was like this almost like this
Hexen.
No, it was like. It was like this really, really like
somebody found Hexen. Yeah.
Daikatana.
Yeah, id Software found Hexen in Excel, and they extracted it. Hexen.
But no, it was like this really weird. It was
Halo
like this,
Excel.
It was like this really weird, slightly like disturbing dungeon that you would go into, and you
so
like
it was a tour. It was a tour of the Microsoft.
And, like, tell them to take it out.
No, I think they just left it there. But
I think you must have downloaded like a. 1995 worm or something.
No, go on there and type in Excel 95 Wolfenstein clone.
I'll find it.
All right.
So anyway.
Oh wait. So
PS4.
Back to the cross-platform stuff. If we're the PlayStation 4, whatever Xbox 720, whatever it is, next generation. If we're going to see even more cross-platform games.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. I mean,
does it make, like, from a practical standpoint, does it make sense to have multiple cons? Like, why would Microsoft and Sony...
You're talking to your first party. What first-party games do you care about? And it's the onus in the next generation is going to be on Microsoft to come up with some first-party games other than Halo.
Wow.
Because in the late gen of the 360, we can count on one hand... Yeah. How many first party? So, and you know, I'm a big fan of Microsoft and what they did with the 360 in this entire generation. But towards the end, it became all about Kinect and the add-on, you know, features like Netflix and Hulu and whatnot.
The apps.
And Sony invested in their first party stuff. You know, be it some of the more successful stuff like Uncharted and Infamous. You know, Microsoft needs to see.
Well, Microsoft can bring back Midtown Madness.
I'd play it.
Which was Crimson Sky. Like, what first party
Project Gotham.
Games does like, Microsoft
what
have?
MechWarrior.
MechWarrior, yeah. Flight Simulator.
Killer Instinct, right? Don't they own Rare?
What's going on with
Rare? They sold Rare.
Did they get rid of?
I thought they sold them.
Well, they probably should. I don't think so. They have
get
to.
On that.
Honestly.
Captain iPod.
No, but I'm being serious. With the Xbox 360, what first I didn't have an Xbox 360, but what
there was that game.
What first party games did they have other than Halo? I don't know.
Perfect Dark. I mean, Rare had a bunch of things.
Perfect Dark.
It had Cameo, Elements of Power, around launch time. That was kind of a shitty game, but
it's a Conker.
Shitty. The game rocked.
Oh yeah, Conker's Bad Fur Day. They could.
I mean, they could bring some of those things.
That's all Rare.
Midtown Madness, MechWarrior.
Well, that's why they bought Rare, is to bolster their first party.
Banjo Kazooie. They had
or 1.5 party, whatever Rare technically was.
Right.
No, they're still owned by Microsoft. Rare is still.
That's a shame. For Microsoft.
The Microsoft era.
There were, these may have been.
I'm sorry, Rare guys. I'm
maybe this was
here.
Baloney.
For all
but
the Rare guys.
There were rumors that I thought I read that said that Nintendo may want to buy Rare back from them. But I don't.
No,
maybe
they
that
don't.
Was just,
well, you know, Microsoft.
Trust me, they don't.
After the success.
Trust me.
Of,
they why do you think they got rid of
the
them?
For the I, they would want the intellectual property. The intellectual property.
Trust me,
yeah,
they
Nintendo
don't.
Doesn't. I don't think Nintendo wants to buy it.
Trust me. Everyone who made Rare Rare is no longer with Rare.
David Doak.
No.
The great.
Who's David Doak?
Free Radical.
Exactly. Yeah. He's with.
And now, I mean, now Crytek has Free Radical and. No. They're not doing anything with Time Splitters, so.
Damn.
Well, the other possibility is for Microsoft that they will try to take Windows 8, put it on
on the Xbox,
put it on the console, have it on the window, the Surface, have it everywhere
with an unlockable
on
Windows
the phone,
3.1.
The electric table that they invented.
Yeah, well, I mean,
the Surface.
The table Surface?
Yeah, remember they remember Microsoft invented the electric table.
Yeah, I remember
it's like a tablet, but on
the
table.
It was like $12,000, and you have a
when Dillinger
room.
Was typing on the table in Tron, that was awesome. If I could get a table like that, where I could talk to the MCP, Master Control Program, of Space Paranoid Sales, and he's like,
"How come
I've tapped into the Pentagon and I beat all their programs?"
How come in the future keyboards don't have any labels on any of the keys?
Oh.
Wasn't it the past?
You ever notice that?
Because it works by your mind.
That's right. The future of
1982? Yes, exactly. Like, like Teletran 1. Like, how do they know what button they're pressing?
Well.
Star Trek, how do they
Teletran
know what button?
Teletran 1, the Autobots. They
yeah, why did they need a keyboard? They're all robots.
They had
to Teletran 1. Give me a status update.
Look, we all know that Teletran 1 didn't have any keys on it because the Autobots spoke to Teletran 1
it had Siri.
With their mind.
Right?
It's like magic, yes.
Teletran That's, 1, is it raining sense. Outside?
The buttons are just, they're just kind of like, you know how you pet your dog? Like, you're like, you just, so it knows you're there and that you love it. That's what the buttons,
it's just
like,
there
I love you, Teletran. It's like a stroking kind of.
Whoa. Stroking the
it's like stroking the,
I'm sorry.
Like, that's how robots show affection to each other. I know these things. I'm a big fan of Transformers.
As are we, by
there's,
the way.
There's whole forums. There's like a whole thing on DeviantArt about robots.
Whoa. All.
Come on. You're a brony, you know.
True.
Are you a big G1 fan?
Can't deny that.
Yes, I am. A big G1 fan.
Good. Are you a big G1 fan?
I might prefer Beast Wars, actually.
Wait a minute! Ouch!
No, I mean, I like it.
Wait, Optimus
saying,
Prime is a surfing gorilla.
It's like, I remember when Beast Wars had first.
Mind.
I remember when Beast Wars had first come out, and all like the older fans were like complaining about like how
terrible.
Optimus Prime was a gorilla and everything like that.
With a surfboard.
Like truck, not monkey. You know, like that was like the calling was like
truck,
not monkey.
Now, the problem with that show was the animation was so expensive to do, nothing would happen. The whole show, the whole episode was Optimus Prime sitting in a tree. Like speaking. What was he doing? He was like doing like poetry and stuff. It doesn't make any sense.
Hey, Beast Wars was legit. I don't know what you're talking about. It was legit.
Wait a minute, though.
This is,
wait.
I want to watch.
Wait a minute, though. Are we,
that's
are
what
are
I remember from
about
it.
Animation in Beast Wars?
Yes.
In defense of G1?
Hey!
Animation
sometimes,
was fine.
Let me tell you, there's nothing wrong with animation in G1. Sometimes on Cybertron, your Decepticon symbol would change into an Autobot symbol, and it would be the wrong color.
There is scientific proof mass shifting is perfectly possible.
It happens.
There's no reason that a 30-foot tall robot can't transform into a cassette player. Or guns.
I remember, technology. Even as a kid, it's like, no, that's bullshit. He turned into no handgun.
This is the last, look, I'm sorry to derail this, but this is the last thing I'll say about, I loved the cartoon, I loved the toys. I was always kind of like upset or disappointed as a child when, on the cartoon, obviously of the big robots, the small robot, I would get like, okay, my parents bought me Optimus Prime, awesome, transform it. And then I get the toy of like Blaster, who transforms into the radio. Why is the toy of Blaster twice the size of the toy of Optimus Prime?
Let me tell you, I'm a collector of the modern era Transformers stuff, and the scale issues have not gotten that much better. They come in different. There's a couple distinct size definitions of the toys. There's like Voyager size and Masterpiece size, and when you're making things that change into other things, it's just...
I know.
It's what you gotta deal with. And most of the original G1 stuff started out as non-Transformer toys in Japan.
Yeah,
anyway.
It was all licensed.
Like Shockwave and Jetfire was a Veritech.
I think Hasbro, we can agree on one thing. At least it wasn't GoBots.
Right? Yes.
Hasbro cherry-picked all the best transforming robot toys from all the different lines in Japan.
In
G1.
In G1, exactly.
First year.
And it was Marvel that wrote the story, right? Or something like
the
that?
The comics, The backstory, everything.
But
the names.
Man, I wish, speaking of GoBots, I wish Transformers had a Rolls Royce that transformed into a robot with a top hat.
And a monocle.
I gotta
remember
give
that?
GoBots that one guy.
The robot had a monocle.
Oh, man, he was awesome.
He was awesome.
I was always jealous of my friends that had that, but I could never bring myself to actually go buy a GoBot.
Anyway.
So, PlayStation 4 doesn't have any GoBots either.
No.
It's all G1 Transformers.
Actually, they announced a GoBots game. I'm kidding. That would be awesome.
That would be pretty badass. That would be pretty badass.
They did a Voltron game in this
GoBots versus the Rock Lord.
That was terrible.
PlayStation
4. It was bad.
Yeah, it was very bad.
All right, well, about the PS4, though, about like all the
controller,
hardware.
We're going to talk about that.
The controller, but also with the hardware itself, they're making it more developer-friendly. They're really addressing all the issues. Of course, there's one side effect.
Which is great.
There's one side effect. Backwards compatibility.
Yes.
Which
not
I think,
happening.
Yeah, I mean, which, I mean, if you can't have both, if it has to be one or the other, I think the better hardware is
They're making
is
the
probably,
right choice.
Yeah.
You
for
know.
Sure.
They didn't have it in this generation, except for that first, like, 3 months.
Well,
on and off.
No,
and off.
There's a couple of different flavors of PS2 backwards compatibility. First of all PS3s were PS1 backwards compatible at all times. The PS2, the first half of the first generation of the PS2.
Up until the 80 gig
right.
one.
The 20 and the 40, and then the first
60.
80 gigs had software backwards compatibility. They removed the Emotion Engine chipset in order to cut costs, so they say.
Right.
Whether or not that's legit.
Which makes sense. I mean, why?
I don't know.
It could be. I've always speculated that it was more a diversionary tactic to get people to start buying actual PS3 software. Because at the time, we were still in a frenzied height of PS2 popularity when PS3 launched. Like, PS2 was still riding the wave of being, like, selling.
It was the mainstream console.
Oh, my God.
Yeah,
and for at least two or three more years after that, I mean, Sony didn't want to drop the axe on it. It was incredibly profitable for them at the time.
It's still getting games. Yeah. Like, it's still like a game or
Madden,
two. It's still a game or two leaking out.
The last expansion to Final Fantasy XI is coming out, I believe, in the end of this month in Japan. That might be the final game, at least in Japan.
So Final Fantasy
says,
XI.
Says the magical voice.
Thank you, God. Thank you for sharing that with us.
The all-knowing man behind the curtain there.
Yes. Hello.
But the PS2, they emulated it for a little while, and then they cut it off completely. Mm-hmm. But in recent year, in the past year, they obviously figured out how to emulate it via software but they're doing it in kind of container emulation, where the games, the PS2 games, are specific games for sale on the PlayStation Network. So
right, yeah.
I bet that they probably figured out how to maximize all the hardware in the PS3, and they probably could emulate anything. They probably could throw you a downloadable, executable, here's a PS2 emulator, but right. they're not going to do that because they want you to pay $7 or $8 or $10 for the, and that's
which
fine.
Which is fair, yeah.
It's fine. That's totally whatever.
Question for you. the PlayStation 3.
You didn't raise your hand. Oh. Yes,
with,
Rob.
With the PlayStation 3, you said originally it had hardware backwards compatibility.
Yep.
The original ones also came with Linux, right?
Well, yeah, we talked about this on a past podcast.
But why? Like, here's my question. I don't care. Like, they took it out. I don't care. Why did it come with Linux?
I think that had ever been to do with Europe. I think that had to do with Europe. There's some kind of like tax exemption that
you a computer.
Yeah, like you could. It technically
so
qualified
it
as a. Yeah, it was a loophole.
Oh, so they didn't care about Linux.
They technically were able to get.
I don't
it
know why they would care.
Considered
about
as. All right, all right. Get considered
all right, we can move on. That's all. I just
a computer.
To, I was just curious. Yeah.
That is.
That's story, what I've heard.
And we're sticking to it.
That makes sense.
It was an incredibly gimped version of Linux. It did not have access to the all the CPUs or all the cells.
Right.
And Sony removed it because there was an escalation of security flaw, like hacking, that people were using the Linux software to basically jailbreak the PS3 at that time, which, you know, Sony was like, we have to close every door that we can
sure,
to this.
Yeah.
And this
no, I
this
don't care that they took it. I was just always curious, like, why did...
Yeah, I mean, it sucks that there was some loss of functionality, even if nobody used it. No one likes to see anything go away, but it happened.
Yeah.
And backwards compatibility is probably, you know, people just need to understand that this is a completely new piece of hardware, and the games, Sony is not going to be able to get PS3 games in by and large to work on the PS4, so this is a great...
Well, natively, right, in the hardware.
Not natively, and certainly not natively in the hardware, and if it's something that's like a smaller scale game that they can emulate, there's going to be compatibility questions, you know, like maybe... Right. Even maybe a small game might use some kind of graphics processing right. that the PS4 just can't natively do in any way, shape, or form.
Well, it's a cost-benefit analysis, the amount of effort that it would take to get certain things to work on, you know, different hardware.
If it's a third-party game, if Sega wants to, you know, take whatever it costs to get, let's say, Hell Yeah, or some other game, like... You know, Afterburner.
I mean, that's what happened to Microsoft with the 360. After a while,
they
became
just gave up.
Yeah, because it's like after a while, it became sort of one-offs. Like they were doing like every game had to be worked on from scratch.
Yeah,
so it was like,
they were just like we're not updating our list of games anymore. That's it. So what works and what doesn't.
It stopped like half the library or something like that.
So regarding backwards compatibility on the PlayStation 4. Aren't they talking about like maybe doing some kind of streamings, like on live type of service?
Sony bought Gaikai.
Yeah. They bought it last year. They're speculating that
is that a solution potentially?
You know what? I am optimistic that Sony will figure out something that will make it work.
Or does it even matter? I mean, does backwards compatibility, is it that much of a non-negotiable? That's like,
I think it matters more at the launch window.
Yeah.
You know, if people when the library's smaller,
it's a value proposition at launch. It's like,
I just feel like if I'm going to wait in line, I'm a hardcore guy. I'm buying this thing day one. I just spent $400 on the new console. I get it home. Yippee! I can't wait to play an old game on it. Like, I want to play the new games, right?
I agree with you on that, definitely. I don't get the point. I mean,
people are outraged on backwards compatibility, but the reason is that
what will happen a lot of times, it may not happen with us, but with like a lot of kids sometimes, they'll say, all right, well, they'll say to the parents, I want a PS4.
Yeah.
Oh, you got a PS3. This thing costs $700, whatever, $600. So they have to trade it in and get nothing for it at GameStop.
Like $30.
So, but the problem is, they've traded this system in. Yeah. Now, what are they? Either have to trade every game they've bought in for nothing, or Now what? Now the game's...
Yeah, it's a value proposition. Yeah.
They plus, just collect
dust. Plus, is always a space issue, too. I mean, sometimes, I mean, it truly is nice to have a one machine that can play, like, you know, four generations of games.
Yeah.
The PS2 and other systems in recent generations, like the Wii and the Xbox, to some small degree, had some type of backwards compatibility.
The 360.
Those are, you know, they're a product of maybe what we're going to see as a bubble of in time in the history of gaming, where companies did this thing to accommodate for people who had concerns about the library that they amassed. Like, am I going to take it? The longevity of their software, am I going to bring it onto this next console?
Yeah.
But maybe these companies are seeing long term, like, you know what? We can prove that the companies that don't do the backwards compatibility, and they ask people to buy Super Mario Brothers again, and they ask people to buy Halo again, a new HD version. Right. These people buy them, so
for like $5.
Yeah, I mean, you know, let's resell them. I'm not going to champion that, because I think backwards compatibility is a thing that's incredibly pro-consumer. But I'm also not going to crucify a company for saying, look, you know, what Sony's doing right now, it's a technical limitation. Mm. Yeah. They just can't do it with the PS4.
It's a totally different architecture.
But let's say in the next generation, Microsoft uses some kind of similar hardware architecture, and they're like, you know what? If you want to play Halo Reach or Alan Wake again, you got to buy them again. Like, we're not going to let you...
Digitally,
yeah, something.
Or like just don't get rid of your old console.
Right. Which always boggles me, because us in our niche of our community, we're a collector's community, right? And we have so many vocal people in our community that piss and moan about this backwards compatibility issue. But aren't we all supposed to be these hoarder collectors?
Yeah, they don't need it.
Never get rid of their systems. Like, I don't.
Well, which brings us to the next topic.
Are we ready to move off PS4?
No. What I was going to say. But look, when we grew up, there was the NES. Mm-hmm. That was the first Nintendo system. Then it went to the Super Nintendo, was not backwards compatible. Then it went to the N6, nothing. GameCube. The Wii was the first Nintendo console that was backwards.
Home console.
Game Boy Advance was backwards.
The home console.
Yeah, but that was a handheld. But the first actual physical, you know, console that
from
was
Nintendo, at least.
Yeah, Nintendo that was backwards compatible back to the GameCube. And honestly, I really don't think it needed to be.
Yeah, I mean, there was some
gamers just like to complain.
Well, I think what ends up happening is it's just like anything else. When something is sort of there, but it's not necessarily like in the forefront, like, I mean, sure, the Genesis could play Master System games with an adapter.
Right,
you know,
right.
The 7800 could play 2600 games. But it's like, it wasn't really like it was sort of like a feature, as opposed to with something like the PS2
right.
being backwards compatible. Now it's sort of like a new standard.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
It's like in a couple of generations, and it becomes
an industry
standard and an expectation of the consumer. Mm-hmm. And again,
this applies to any kind of anything. Like, think of a fighting game. You know, if fighting game number 2 has 20 characters, fighting game the third sequel has 30, and the fourth sequel has 35, and then the fifth one comes out with 20, people are going to complain.
Oh,
you know what I mean?
Naturally.
So it's
even if those 20 are like the best 20 of all time,
or if there are other reasons why, if there are other things going on.
It's like with Rambo, he's got to keep upping the body count every movie.
You know, it's like that serial escalation,
it's an arms race.
You know. It's very hard to scale back once you've established a new standard.
The other thing I would say is, and I don't think this last generation may be the only one where, but in the past, it was usually if the console was backwards compatible like that, they did it because they were getting in on the ground floor almost. You know, they didn't have the market share. Mm-hmm. Genesis. The Master System was
Coleco
like,
had the Atari adapter.
That was different.
That's not stealing market.
No, but I'm saying it's like, hey, we're the new guys. We have to do something to stand out.
Which
from
is, I love the Coleco and the Atari adapter. That's a great moment in history. It's like, hey, we have this really technologically advanced video game system, and it can also You can buy this add-on and you can play all the stuff of our competitors.
The point, like,
which is war, which like, is like downgraded.
But then they were developing for competitors.
Wait, yeah. It was an add-on downgrade.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. It made the graphics worse.
But I think with the PlayStation, what makes it, I think the name of the console is part of the issue.
When you PlayStation.
PlayStation 1, PlayStation 2, PlayStation 3. Yeah. If it were like the Sony whatever.
Yeah, but they're not going to get rid of
it. No, I'm not saying they would, but I'm saying like because of the name has been kept.
Oh,
for
I see
so
what
long,
you're saying.
It sort of creates a kind of expectation,
right?
You know,
right.
I think it's at least more so than if.
Well, if
it
you
were
call something
machines.
The Wii U, you expect it to. It's in the same family
exactly,
of the Wii, you
but know? That does play Wii games.
Right, exactly. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Right, exactly.
Like nobody would expect. You know, it's like whereas like the GameCube versus the N64, completely different systems,
right. Really
different software, well, like format, you know. Yeah.
With any hardware, there's always going to be trade-offs. So the thing is for Sony now, there's no backwards compatibility to the PS3, so the question is going to be for the buyer, I don't get this anymore, now what do I get instead?
Right.
Right, what's the incentive to buy this game console?
Better in network infrastructure.
Oh, the
now what do you mean by that? Better network infrastructure.
Do you have a PS3?
No.
It's the PS3. Even for people who are PS3 enthusiasts, I will tell you,
the updates
are frequent, and the infrastructure that Sony has with the PlayStation Network Store, there was never any download cap. Microsoft was really smart in the early days of Xbox 360. They have since removed a lot of the you can only make a game that was like 500 megabytes in the original downloads. And that was to keep their networks zippy and, and you know, fast downloads. Sony never had a cap on it. Games were huge. They would take hours to download. There was inconsistency from person to person. Like, I have lived in different places, and I've had different downstreams on my broadband internet. I lived in a place where I had maybe a 30 megabyte downstream. And it would take me 2 hours to download a game that was less than a gig. And then I lived in a place that I had incredibly crappy, maybe like 10 or 15 downstream. And the same game would take less time. Like, it doesn't, it was.
That's not crappy, by the way. But.
Oh, well, I know. 15. I know, that's a that's
no,
like
I,
a
I, I
that's
know
like
what
a,
you're saying. I know what you're saying.
You know, when you're living in New Jersey, it's like a crapshoot where you live and what kind of broadband you get, you know. And I've been lucky to have copper in both places and not, you know, satellite.
Forget that.
But
I know what you're saying. It's
inconsistent
from user to user.
And it's very slow. It's just generally very slow. It's not typically problematic when you're playing online games if you're in a multiplayer. Bless you.
Bless you. Sorry about that.
Sorry. Yeah. I should have just ignored it.
But it's the download of the actual software, and Sony pushing the PlayStation Network legitimate, and they should, because there's a lot of good content on there. It can be frustrating when you want to download a full game day and date, or maybe you're a member of their PlayStation Plus program, where they're giving free games, you know, on a weekly basis that are full-size retail, like 17 gig games are going to take like 4 hours to download.
Right.
Well, it's like a kid in a candy store. You go on and there's like 10 free things to download. It's like it's going to take you half the day. You know?
Yeah, right.
Like,
pretty much.
So they're totally revamping from the ground up.
And they're doing things that are, I mean, the whole thing that they were talking about where you can actually play the game as you're downloading it. You know, because it downloads in such a way.
I came up with that idea on the forum like 3 years ago.
I mean, that's brilliant. That's a great idea.
If you go to digitpress.com, we post on the forum. And people were saying, like, digital distribution will never take off, games are too big, blah. And I said, why can't they come up with some kind of thing where you start to download, it gets to, you know, maybe like 10 minutes in, hey, I can play level 1. Yeah.
It's like the first part of the game.
Downloading in the back.
Serendipity.
I invented this.
And I came up with the idea that GameStop is doing now, which is basically a digital game market and a trade market. Well, because, you know,
if you go on PSN and you download like Metal Gear 9 or whatever it's called, and then you play it, it's digital. Yeah. You have a digital copy. 6 months later, you're like, all right, well, I want to trade this game in. Well, you can. It's digital. Mm-hmm. You trade it in, and you get like, you know, here's $5 off your next digital.
Oh, it's just an incentivization. That, oh, they're not actually reselling it, but it's like a couponing type thing where like they've seen that you've bought a game from them.
It's like
they're giving you incentive off their next game.
And it erases it from your system and you can't play it anymore. Right? That makes sense.
Yeah. I think the assumption is that what they've tried to... Because I've seen this and the last couple of days where they're talking about how GameStop, in fact, their stock has gone up. Believe it or not, after the piece, because people are like, well, there's only going to be digital games. There's going to be no GameStop. But what they're doing is it's going to be like a more of a central hub where supposedly you if you want a game from this service or that service or whatever it is, you have to go individually, and they think, I guess, people are not going to want to do that.
Right.
And they'll just want to go to one place.
So they're like an iTunes. Emulate Steam or iTunes.
Well, it's like anything else, you know, when things change, you got to adapt or die, you know.
But it's a facade if they're saying that like you can trade a used game in, because they're not actually
They didn't say that. Basically what they're saying is
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, well, you're saying that.
You heard it here first. That's my idea.
If you buy a game and you download the game, you get points.
Oh, okay.
That's basically all it is. Oh, it's like a point system.
Okay. That makes sense. That's, that's a good idea. I mean, well, their power-up rewards, I'm still trying to save up enough for like an Assassin's Creed wristband that's like 10,000 points, and I've got like 7,000 points. So by the time I save up, it'll probably not even be available anymore.
But you're saying that, you know, like right now people can download a game from Steam or God of Games or whatever. You're saying GameStop is just acting as like a
middleman.
Yeah, that's what. All right.
Hey, the GameStop is going to have to figure out something.
It's like the Yahoo of video games. You go to the Yahoo homepage, it's like, here's an ABC News story. Here's a Wall Street Journal story.
You know, GameStop's got to figure something out. If they want to subsist, they have to do something.
Yahoo
retail is having this trouble. I mean, Best Buy is having trouble because most people treat them like, you know, Amazon.com showrooms.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Well, here's the thing.
This is the thing, ladies
it
and
stinks.
Gentlemen.
You heard it here first. Look, it you know, on one hand,
can I pretend to be John Q forum member?
This is why we invited you. You don't
hold
to
on.
Ask. You should just do it.
Listen,
where are my used games? I must have used games, or I will kill you all.
Listen. I know that it stinks when a store goes out of business and people lose jobs and everything, and I feel very bad. But as we look back through history, I think you posted, Mike, that, you know, when the car came around, you know, horse and buggy whip stores went out of business. It's like, did you, or was that
someone? I don't think it was me. I was drunk.
There's a horse and buggy store?
No, I'm saying.
Some horse whip stores went out of business. Others became S&M stores.
Well,
they just changed.
They adapted.
But you see what I'm saying? Like, at some point, you just have to,
Nintendo
I'm sorry,
Best Buy.
Nintendo don't
make cards anymore, you know?
Huh?
Nintendo don't make Hanafuda cards.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
they do?
You gotta go on their Nintendo points reward thing.
Oh, they do still.
Mike has some Hanafuda cards.
Right.
But what I'm saying is, like, at some point, Best Buy or GameStop or whoever can try to adapt and try to, and at some point, it's just that business model is just, it just doesn't fit anymore.
America
at
Online.
At some point, it just
the
doesn't.
America Online.
Yeah, AOL. Yeah. Exactly. It just doesn't fit anymore.
Barnes & Noble is still open.
Barely.
I'm just saying, at some point in time, you can no longer adapt. You know, you can only shoehorn your business model and like patch it up so much before
it sorts it all out. Really,
exactly.
The sorts it
and
all
it does
out.
Depend on whether or not digital truly will replace physical on a universal scale. I mean, it might not
eventually.
It might not eventually.
One of the things I was saying on the forum was, I've said to people is, I don't think it needs to,
in the sense of. I mean, right now, you're almost going to get to the point, even, forget about games, even with movies and TV, eventually you won't need a Blu-ray to watch it.
Right.
However, there will be people who will still want it because as a collector's item. You know, it'll
obvious.
Be,
well, I mean,
well just like vinyl records.
Vinyl,
it's a niche.
It costs,
it's not the mainstream.
I mean, it costs
it's
them,
not the mainstream
yes,
anymore.
Yes, but it costs them nothing to, it would cost them nothing to produce, I don't know, 20,000 copies of the next, whatever the Call of Duty,
Halo
whatever the next game, it will cost them not hardly anything.
It's not the production that's the problem. It's the overhead of the shipping and finding a place to sell it. Mm-hmm. What you'll probably find in that generation, and you're probably right, is game companies will still produce stuff on physical media if there's a, I mean, we'll probably talk about PC, because there won't be any consoles that will accept physical media, but you'll probably have to order direct from these companies.
Like a print-on-demand or something like that?
Yeah, either print-on-demand or like Sony or Microsoft or whatever, Nintendo, whatever these companies, they'll produce X amount and they'll have them in a warehouse somewhere and they'll ship out. There's not going to be a GameStop or a Best Buy where they stop.
There's not going to be a kid that's trying to sell you a subscription to a magazine you don't care about.
I get Game Informer.
Or trying to sell me a warranty on a strategy guide. I no longer shop at GameStop. I don't know if you still.
I do.
Any single a wire, a book, a game, a controller, anything, a memory card.
You sell warranty.
Do you want to buy the warranty for that?
You know,
I don't need a warranty for my AV cable.
It's funny.
I'm sorry.
Look, I don't. I mean, see, it doesn't bother me.
Yeah,
when
pre-order.
Clerks, it doesn't really bother me when Clerks ask me this stuff because it doesn't bother me when Clerks ask this stuff because that's just retail.
It's their job. Yeah, right.
I mean,
it's just
retail.
I was there. You know, I was the guy.
If I'm at Micro Center buying something, they want my email address. If I'm at, for some reason.
They want to put their barcode on whatever it is you're buying so they get their.
You give them the dummy spam account that you set up.
Yeah, I just say no thank you. They don't bother me. They don't get offended.
Oh, how come?
But it's like, Radio Shack wants my zip code.
What else? I mean, you stole my joke.
It's funny.
Why does Radio Shack need my phone number to buy batteries?
Yeah. I mean, the way I see it, it's like, look, they're going to ask me a question. I say, either thank you or no thank you, and that's the end of it. You know, it's like,
so all right, but the real question that all the not even the retro gamers, but all the gamers that kind of went in a tissle over
the hardcore gamers.
They were going nuts was the question of two things. One, if you take away the ability to have used games, which means some kind of software key that's on the actual physical game.
Right, a watermark, a digital watermark.
Whatever.
Or a key code.
Anything,
digital,
really.
Right. Any mechanism that prevents you from transferring the game.
Yes. And so that even if you, in some horrible case, which may happen, your console breaks. Now what do I do with all these games? You know, can I get them
they obviously have to have some sort of transfer system.
All right, so that was the one thing that they were all screaming about was, oh my God, no, you can't have used games because everything's going to be keyed in to that.
Who's they?
Just they. They. All
the John Q Forum.
John Q Forum members.
All the people who have never damaged or broken a physical game in their life, whereas their copy of Grand Theft Auto San Andreas can no longer play. You know, like all these people that have this one polarized logic where it's like, if we have this software that's non-transferable, what happens if my console breaks? Like, all these are people who like treat their physical software typically like crap.
Hold on though. You're getting to a point though. They complain. They'll come up with all the reasons why you need to have
the sun melts my disc.
Why you
what
need
if
to have
an asteroid hits my console
in Russia? Why you need to have?
Too soon.
Too soon.
Too soon, man.
There could be another one anytime.
2036. I just read the report. 2036. We're getting hit by a giant asteroid.
Really?
Unless we nuke it.
You could send it off.
That's actually, I don't want to get off subject.
It's
actually
ones if we nuke it.
You actually don't want to nuke it, but that's another story.
No, they said you don't want to blow it up because then, like what Frank said, you'll
be fragments.
Fragment. They said we want to land on it, set up a whole bunch of rockets, and
push it
and change the tradition. I'm not. This was on the news last night. Hey, I'm serious.
What you would do
that'd be my first instinct.
This is not a Bruce Willis movie.
But Joe Q Forum is worried about if an asteroid hits my console, what do I do?
All right, back on subject. Right. So they'll come up with all the excuses why you must have used games. Because this person will need it. Oh, the kids, they need to trade in games to buy used games. All right, fine. However, what's really the ulterior motive here of why they must have the used games and you must have the physical media?
Why?
You said it before, off camera.
It's inexpensive.
They're too cheap.
No, I said that.
You said
hardcore gamers are cheap.
I have no problem with that, by the way.
They are cheap.
I have no problem with
being
cheap.
I am a hardcore gamer.
I have no problem with
being
cheap.
I'm going to wait till that new release goes down to $5 and screw the developer. Who cares?
Look, no, but here's the thing. When it comes to the way I see
about
consumers are in the business of being consumers. They're not in the business of running a business.
Right.
Likewise, a business is in the business of running a business to be profitable.
Right.
It doesn't have to be antagonistic, but it is an opposition kind of thing. It is kind of combative in that sense, where one side gives a little bit and the other side gives a little bit, and you meet somewhere in the middle that satisfies both sides. So, you know, the consumer is saying, "Listen, I want high quality for very little money," and
naturally, right?
Yeah. Well, it's and the business is about, you know, providing something that will satisfy that while also remaining a profitable business.
Well, just barely satisfy.
Well, satisfy better than the other guy. The other guy satisfies.
Right, and every company has a bunch of guys who sit in a room with old-timey adding machines with a handle, like a
steam abacus.
And then they bring the paper, they run it across to the other room, like the Hudsucker proxy, and they put it in the new
package. I got it.
And then Kaz Hirai looks at it, and it says, like, $2.99, and they're like... And they figure out what is their bottom line to attempt to have that synergy with the consumer. But here's my problem, and I have said this is what I said off camera, and this is what I've said since the whole rumblings started about this next console generation and all the criticisms that we've heard from what we consider to be our peers, our community members, our friends, our forum compatriots, like everybody who considers themselves to be a gamer. In this day and age of modern gaming, people who are our age, some of us may have started with Nintendo, some of us may have started with Atari, some of us may have started with PlayStation 1. Whatever it is, we need to understand that gamers in 2012 and 2013, we have a level of transparency and a level of knowledge at our fingertips that is unprecedented. In the 80s, in the late 70s and the 80s,
it's true.
Consumers were blindly flailing at trying to make the right decisions about technology purchases. We had no fucking information. Companies worked as hard as they could to deceive us in their marketing, in the graphics they showed on the back of the boxes, in the elaborate watercolor paintings on the front of the boxes.
Which I love, by the way.
There was very, very little outlets for us to get any kind of usable information. Magazines were advertisements. They were like 80-page advertisements. And even the earliest, as much as people love them and have nostalgia for them, the earliest Nintendo Powers were like shill advertisements for every game. You couldn't say a bad thing about...
I actually canceled my... Well, I didn't renew the subscription when I was a kid, and I didn't have a problem with it because the last issue I got was around 89 or... was the issue focused on Fester's Quest
for the
NES. And I was like,
A 10-page spread.
Never again.
But we have... There's this kind of sense of... We've had it so good for so long, and we've had so much information at our fingertips, and each and every one of us individually have kind of, in a way, become academic in how much we know about the industry, that we've all become this little internal universe of criticism. And the internet fosters this whole attitude of angry equals informed, and bitter equals cool. And there's no positivity, and there's no optimism, and we can't see the forest for the trees anymore. The game industry, we all claim to love it, and it's like our hobby, and it's what we enjoy, but so many of us are just so bitter, and our default reaction about everything is angry and skeptical and upset, and any room for optimism is completely lost in this generation.
I think that's bullshit.
let's just play games. I mean, that's the whole thing. Let's just play games.
You know whose fault this all is?
It's James.
Who?
What?
The Jews? Whoa,
calm down there, man. Whoa. We may have to delete this whole podcast now. Because that anti-Semitic comment.
Wait a minute.
Wait a second.
We're going to put up technical difficulties. Please stay tuned.
Wait, hold on. Who did you
James?
Say?
Who's James?
You were going to say James
Rolfe.
What? No.
The angry video
is
game.
No.
People hate him.
No, I love him.
He's just a showman.
I'm just... Where I was going with that
he's kind of
playing up the angry, this song, this song.
It's...
So now people think it's cool to say everything
no,
stinks.
No. Predates him.
All right.
It is all George Lucas's fault. It's all his fault. Think about it. It was the first fanboy franchise that had grown as it kept growing, and all of a sudden they put out something that just not only was not good, but it was like everyone hated it, and it changed into. You had this faction of pretty much anybody that was like 20 years old or older at the time who just hated it, and now they hate everything else he's done, and they just hate and hate and hate.
It's a culture of disappointment.
Yes.
It's a culture of disappointment.
Well, but it was bad, though. The stuff was bad.
I agree. But, I mean, I just think that...
And it was the first time that anyone did it on the internet. Really? That was the first time. Yes.
Yeah. There is just something about, we need to all take a step back and take a deep breath and just, I think we really, as a gaming culture, we take it for granted how much great software there is, what great forums there are for great games, and we completely disregard all the great stuff in favor of pinpointing, like, with a microscope, the things that we find that we don't approve of or we don't like or maybe less than perfect and amplifying them. Like,
yeah.
Shit, I mean, okay, Resident Evil 6 wasn't great, but we don't have to go to Capcom's headquarters with pitchforks and torches and burn the company down. Like,
no, well, the effort that goes into just developing a single game, whatever it's a crappy game like Barbie's Funhouse,
yeah, it's huge.
Or if it's Resident Evil 6,
it's
the
huge.
Effort, the money... Like, I mean, think about your day job and how much effort you have to do in your day job. I mean, there's people that have to develop these games.
Well, here's the, you know, well, like, this is what I wanted to bring up, though.
And I hate them.
This leads into the whole thing about, you know, the cost factor. You know, it's the industry has way too much bloat. And this is what's causing, I think this is really what's causing it. All these schemes, all these, like, everything that people point out about, like, whether it's DLC schemes or anti-used game schemes, things like that, it's all done under the guise of, you know, there's not enough money coming in. Well, right. The thing is, there's too much money going out, you know,
exactly.
And I think it's actually hurting a lot of games because, you know, it used to be you sold 1 million copies and you got, you know, player's choice status.
Yeah, that was historical.
Nowadays, you sell 1 million copies, your ass is on unemployment line.
And you know whose fault this is?
Who's that?
Steven Spielberg.
James Rolfe.
James Taylor. Taylor Lautner.
Taylor Swift.
It's all Grand Theft Auto's fault. It's all Rockstar Games' fault.
Really? That's
yes.
I have never
it is
heard
all
Final
their fault.
Final Fantasy.
They
started the whole
thing. I want to hear Greg's logic on Rockstar.
The reason I'll say that is they were the one of the first ones who started doing the what do you call it, the sandbox, like the whole world kind of a game and all that, which is very expensive. It takes a very long time to develop.
It predates that. Final Fantasy VII was the first game that had it was more about the cinematics than it was.
No, that's not what I mean, though. Well, that was a disaster.
So from then on, every game company was like, well, now we have to put $1 million.
No.
Serial escalation, what you're saying is back then you could only do so much damage, but now when you're spending $100 million on Grand Theft Auto V, it's...
Well, it was the arms race. It was like, well, they put 10 minutes of cutscene. We need 20 minutes of cutscene.
That even predated that. You had, like, Origin doing the Wing Commander games with ridiculous budgets for...
hey, let's hire Mark Hamill.
Well, they're out of business the next day. George Lucas.
True, but back then there was back then though a budget could only. You could really only do so much damage. You're not gonna. I mean, no matter what you wanted to do on the PlayStation, you weren't spending $100 million to do
right.
it.
Right. Well. Right. Exactly.
You know. But if when you're developing a game, if you get ahead of, if you go overboard, it's not just in cinematics and the size of the game. In terms of just how many levels there are and where you can go and all that. But also, if you get ahead of the technology, if you try to go with the technology with a game, now, maybe it doesn't happen as much anymore because the systems are so, but, you know, 10, 15 years ago, I can name a lot of games, especially on the PC, where they tried to develop a game to look a certain way, and it just came down to it was going to be too complicated for them. They got in over their heads. They ran out of money. Et cetera, et cetera, and then the company's bankrupt.
Daikatana?
Well.
That's one.
Yes.
They had other problems, too. Yeah.
I'm thinking of Kurt Schilling, Kingdoms of Alamo. Kingdoms of Alamo Reckoning. Kurt Schilling, the guy lost his company because his game, which is honestly a decent game, it's a perfectly competent, enjoyable game, that it sold like 1.2 million copies in the first, like,
well, you know what
the first, like,
was?
3 months or something like
the
that.
The development cycle on that game was so long that the genre that it was popular in when it started became unpopular before they finished the game. And that's that is literally what the critical...
No, but here's the thing, though. It sold well if we're talking about just generally. You think the thing sold over a million copies. You think that sells good. It had to sell three times as much just to get out of the red.
Has the same problem that Disney has in marking its own successes. If everything is always judged by what is the top seller, then there will never be any, you know, the successes. Call of Duty is like, friggin' Modern Warfare is like a $50 billion game. Like, nothing can even come close to achieving that, so everything else will be a failure.
Right. Oh, and because...
They're spending as if they're going to hit those numbers.
Yes.
You know, it's like, it's great that Call of Duty can sell that much. Call of Duty.
But
you know, you're not going to do that. Final Fantasy VII sold about 3 million copies in the U.S. That's how many Kingdom of Alamer had to sell just to break even.
I know.
Well, not only that.
The financial bubble is bursting, though, and in the next generation, we're going to see a dynamic shift to the great thing about marketplaces like the App Store and Google Play Market and Steam with their pricing structures is that they're aggressively disrupting the market in terms of showing that you don't have to have a budget of $100 million and sell your game for $60 MSRP. You can have a development team of 10, use existing toolkits like Unreal, you know, Engine 3 or whatever, make a game for $1 million and sell it for 99 cents and make more than enough profit to fund.
Not even $1 million.
Yeah.
In World of Goo, what was like,
What was Angry Birds? What was Cut the Rope?
Yeah.
And the big companies, it's going to take the old guard, it's going to take Sony and Microsoft a little while to embrace this, but Sony, I believe, based on what they've said, and we will see in this next generation if they're going to embrace it, but they said at their presentation that we're going to see free-to-play on our next gen, we're going to see a dynamically different pricing structure. There has to
one.
Be.
Well, no, but see, here's the thing. Is the pricing structure the solution, or is it just, you know what? Screw the pricing structure. Spend less money.
Yes, but in order to spend less, you've got to make a smaller, not necessarily simpler, but it's got to be a smaller game. And like you were saying, if you look at the PlayStation, you go back to 1996.
Does it have to be a smaller game?
Because it's the only way to make it cheaper.
Well, it depends. I mean, it depends on what you're talking about in terms of size. I mean, Daggerfall is a gigantic game. You know, the second Elder Scrolls. It's humongous. I mean, it's an old game, but it's humongous. Now, the thing is, I mean, so it depends on what you're... I mean,
yeah, but if it's a game...
Fester's Quest is a big game, too.
Yeah, but the question is, what does it look... If it's a game that's, like, out in the middle of the... You know, like, it's like a medieval
Minecraft
game.
Minecraft is a pretty big game. you know?
Right, but the thing is, if you I'll go back to the Rockstar example. They take forever to make their games, and they're very good games. I mean, the graphically and the detail is insane.
Well, I'm not saying,
but that costs money.
Look, I'm not saying to like get rid of these blockbuster titles. I'm not saying that Grand Theft Auto has to scale down. If certain franchises can sell that many copies, by all means, spend $100 million, you know, to make them what you can make them. But you can't do that with every game. Right. You can't do that with every single franchise.
I think the market is working itself out. That's what it comes down to.
Well, more Minecraft, baby.
But the problem is
Minecraft's an anomaly, though. That's something that I don't think you're going to see any replication. That's something that comes around like once every several generations,
right,
where somebody.
Like a cave story, a Minecraft.
Sure, something that is
Angry Birds.
Simultaneously, it has that synergistic quality of being modern and retro and a non-game, but also incredibly appealing to gamers. Like it's everything and nothing all at once, and it's lightning in a bottle. That game. I mean, I think it's incredibly impressive, but I don't think we should ever expect that to happen every generation or every year.
Well, no, it's not going to happen every time. There's a lot of luck involved, of course, with Minecraft. But
you can't aspire to do that, though. You can't set out. That's the problem. You can't.
Well, no, not that. I'm just saying, just that, you know, you can't make a good game on a small budget in this day and age. Think about the indies, but it can be done. Not Minecraft level, but it can be done.
The problem is, though, the guy who's waiting in line at midnight spending $400 on a PlayStation 4 doesn't want to bring it home and pop in a disc and say,
"Looks like Minecraft.
Why are we back to Pac-Man?" You know, like,
true.
I just spent $60 on, you know, like, you're not buying, no, I know, but I'm just saying, buying a $400 state-of-the-art machine to play 99-cent Angry Bird games.
This is where creativity comes out, though, because you can make a game look good without making it expensive to look, without it costing a lot to make it look good,
First of all, why do games cost $100 million?
Because I have no idea.
Bloated production costs.
I have no idea what's causing it.
Too many employees. I mean, $100 million game production is, you look at a studio like Ubisoft with the Assassin's Creed franchise, which I absolutely adore Assassin's Creed.
I'm sorry, just to interject, just to give frame of references, $100 million to make Grand Theft Auto V, the entire Lord of the Rings trilogy cost like $275 million to
movies.
Make. Yeah. All three movies together cost about $275 million.
I mean, you know? Exactly. You're not, $100 million is not going into the software tools.
No.
It's going into employing
hundreds of
employees that are working
for 2 years,
on these,
right?
And marketing, mm-hmm, and production, and bonuses, and budgets, and health insurance.
But if you have a staff of 100 people working...
You don't need 100 people.
I know. If you have a staff of 100 people working for a year versus if you have a staff of 100 people working for 2 years...
Sure.
You just doubled your budget.
Of course.
What?
Yeah. This
Why
is
it taking 2 years?
Of the next generation is that studios... And we have to believe that all of the major studios and a lot of the minor studios are looking and saying, okay, in this past generation, everyone aspired to make the AAA game. Everyone wanted to make a Halo. Everyone wanted to make an Uncharted. Everyone wanted to make a Grand Theft Auto. And we have proven beyond a shadow of a doubt that even the ones that come incredibly close do not subsist. So
the brand name is all that matters.
Well, we've proven that everyone can't make.
And even in the cases where they're incredibly successful brandings, the Halos and the Call of Duties and the Assassin's Creeds and the Uncharted's will eventually taper off in terms of their popularity and start to recede.
The problem too is that games are not movies. You can't. You know, a game, game software, right?
They want to be movies so bad, but they're just not.
But you can't. They don't.
They're not.
They're not long-term profit. The long-term profitability is in the IP. It's not in the individual product. You know, after about what is it? Like maybe 6 months. You don't
wake up.
You know, after about like 6 months or something like that, a game loses its entire revenue stream.
Somebody set up the bomb.
It's going to explode.
Sorry.
Yeah, well.
Sorry about that.
What is it?
But the thing is, I mean,
I think it's online.
Something like Back to the Future. Universal still makes money off of Back to the Future. Yes. But, you know, if you, well, Square Enix can't sell Final Fantasy VII over and over again, they got to get off their ass and make a new game.
You get theater sales, you get DVD sales, you get
television. TV,
right. Yeah. With a video game, you get that first sale.
Right.
I mean, at best, what do you do? What? At best, if you have a really, really classic game, you could sell it for what? $5, $10?
Yeah, but then the problem is you look at like Sonic, where it's like people got tired of the side-scrolling Sonic, so they went into the 3D, people hated that. Then they ran out of those ideas, and you couldn't just keep spitting them out, so all of a sudden it's Sonic Racing and Sonic playing poker, Sonic. Sonic playing soccer.
Let's reel this back in.
Sonic Shuffle was the best game ever.
Mike made the great point about creativity. If you go back and you look at you look at the PlayStation. This is the irony. One of the reasons the PlayStation was so successful was because it had the CD medium. You had all of those PC ports that came from companies like Shiny and who did the Munch games?
Oh, Oddworld.
Oddworld Inhabitants.
Yes. So, but you had all these small developers like back in the 80s on computer, and they would come out of nowhere, basically very small staff. They maybe have one really good programmer, you know, and they come up with a game. And you could put it on the PlayStation because it didn't cost a lot of money.
Risk.
It was easy to develop. It was easy to develop, unlike the Saturn or the N64, and N64 there was a big license fee to get on there.
That's what I'm saying. It was low risk. Well, but now the cost of entry,
the marketplace where we're seeing this type of new renaissance is the iPad.
Mm. Yeah.
We're seeing the small budget studios, the emphasis on playability and creativity at $0 to buy or 99 cents as the median price.
Right.
And I think that Sony, Microsoft, and Nintendo would have to have their heads in the sand to be ignoring this. And I don't think they're ignoring it. I just think that they're trying to figure out a way to get their atypical consumer to buy into their digital marketplaces. And Xbox Live and PSN have been successful, but Sony wants to be able to profit off of that.
Yeah, I mean, that's going to be where the question is, though, is now, because we've had people here at NAVA that have said, small developers who've said, you know what, I'm not going to put my stuff on Xbox Live because it costs too much money. Mm-hmm. Well, it doesn't really cost them anything, but they don't make any money unless they sell, 75,000 copies
Minimum,
or something, you know. So you push them away because you want to make the money, and now is there going to be like a reverse like price slashing race where you know they're going to be
win for consumers.
Well, it's an attempt
fighting to get on the platform.
You have to find that equilibrium again, you know, because you know, starting from back when it was Mode 7 versus blast processing, you had that arms race, and then it became with the FMV arms race, like 20 minutes of FMV, an hour of FMV on the PlayStation. And, after a while, 15 years of that, and it just builds and builds and builds. And now all of a sudden you hit this wall. It's like, oh, no. It's like after selling our games for whatever we've been selling them for and costing as much as they've been costing to produce, now we hit that point where we've gone above what the market will sustain. Everyone keeps talking about the market is growing, but it's not growing fast
the
enough
giant
in the right
companies,
direction.
The giant companies,
you have to just scale back.
The Blizzards and the Activisions and the giants cannot make the smaller games that people are going to look at and say, you know what? That's a game I've never really seen. I've not seen, but that's something different. They won't do them because they're so ingrained with the accountants and all. Oh, no, we can't do that. That's a risk. Can't do that. That's a risk. So when developers or publishers like THQ go out of business, that's a good thing. You're getting rid of the dead weight. Get it out of here. Get it out.
The problem though is that it seems like every publisher and every developer is facing this because you have all the accountants and everything like that, but because of the way that they're almost teetering on the brink of collapse, at any moment, if they release a game that is supposed to sell a certain amount, if any single disaster, they're not insulated.
Well,
one, I mean, You know, right. I mean, two EA took a big hit because of Mirror's Edge. That was supposed to be a big thing.
Two things there. One thing about these companies that are failing, these mid-range studios like THQ. The great thing is, it's like you throw a jar of jelly beans on the ground and all the jelly beans scatter. When these companies dissolve like that, you know, hopefully this disbursement of talent, like these people that are suddenly like out of the jar and they're rolling around on the floor, they're hopefully going to pool together into smaller creative teams because they still want to work in the industry. Mm-hmm. And that's when we're going to, you're going to see all these new things cropping up, single individual developments from single developers or like small teams that came from the fallout of these huge companies that were desperately trying to make these AAA titles. And maybe that's a benefit because now these guys and girls have this experience with high-tech stuff, and they can easily, quickly, rapidly crank out stuff that's creative and streamlined. Mm-hmm.
And they learned, hopefully, what not to do.
Here's another theory that I have with that, though, and which is why I think when you look at the iPad and the ability to, as just somebody in your living room, if you can program a game, if you're a good programmer, maybe you're not a greatest designer, but whatever, you know, sometimes you can't, you know, can't have both. But what I would look at and say, and maybe I'm wrong, but when you look at these giant games, they are artists, there's no programmers, really. I mean, they run off an engine. So what I'm saying is that they've made it so much easier to build a game without programmers that I think that you take something away from figuring out how to do a good game like they used to do back for the 2600 and NES, where it was programmers. Yes, you had people who would design games like Miyamoto or something, but you would have programmers and they'd go in there and they program the game, and I think it was a better model that way.
It was to me.
It wasn't just artists.
Well, you know what it is? I mean,
I was wrong with artists. But
limitation breeds innovation. You know,
right.
And just like anything else, if you give somebody, you know, a month to write a research paper, it'll take them a month. If you give them 6 months to write that same research paper, how long is it going to take them?
six months.
So it's kind of like...
Really one,
you know,
day.
So
but
the two
it's the th-
those two together, that
months.
It's like, you know, if you give people the world, they might not use it as well as... They might not work as
or
well
you
as if you give somebody
6 weeks to release Pac-Man over the holiday season,
yeah.
And you have the Atari 2600 version of Pac-Man.
Well,
you know, it's
true.
There are so many question marks, and we can only speculate and try to hope that the industry finds itself in a combination of a little bit of dire straits, a little bit of new renaissance, and a continuation of pushing the boundaries of the art and the art of the medium. I mean, I don't want to see us recede completely back into this mono kind of chromatic, like 8-bit world. I want to see us progress forward towards more artistic, cinematic, and dramatic things. And I also want to see creativity be bred from people being in state of desperation, like creators going like, I have to do something that stands apart, but is also incredibly fun, and I want to see companies that focus on gameplay. And if the industry keeps doing what it's doing in this later half of this generation, there is a possibility of dire consequences. Yeah. Like,
you're going to start seeing a lot of companies go under.
No, advance the medium as a whole. You know, I mean, look at, compared to other entertainment mediums, be it books or like movies, where people like, those are established, people are like, okay, we know what this is. Like, we're not going to question it because this is our culture. Like, games is still so new that people keep attacking it all the time. Like, oh, like all the soccer ball moms, whenever something violent happens to a recent tragic shooting at whatever that school that was. It's like, first thing they say, oh, it's video games because we don't understand what games are.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So
that's a whole different topic.
Well, it is. Hey. But I'm talking about advancing the medium so that games are accepted in the same light as books.
Well, that,
movies.
Really quickly, my thoughts on that problem is that that is a generational problem that will go away. I give it another like 30 or 40 years when everyone in a position of authority and who are in these positions, be it psychologists or politicians, have all grown up and have played games like Grand Theft Auto,
right,
and played games
right.
like Modern Warfare or all of the modern things. The reason we have this disconnect right now with the authoritarians and the gamers is because the authoritarians are in a complete bubble and they've never touched the stuff. They only know games from the perspective of, you know, what they hear.
Right.
When we have a sitting president that that owned a Dreamcast, then we'll be in good shape.
Yeah, but this happens every generation. Comic books, rock and roll music, Dungeons and Dragons, now it's video games.
They were all generational problems.
In 20 years from now, the next new thing, and it'll be that. He
holograms!
He did a bad
thing. Holographic projectors!
Finally!
They cause all the violence! Hoverboards! Hoverboards cause all the violence. We only have a few more years to those, right?
2015.
Wait, now, hey, okay, second black president, Chris King, okay, via arcade in every state.
President King.
Government-funded arcades in every state, baby. Okay.
Mandatory
arcades, baby. Okay. All right.
I just want to say two things, and we'll move on to the next topic real quick. But number one, like what I said before about Best Buy, how mm-hmm. you can only keep patching and patching and patching a business model so long before it's just not relevant in the world that keeps evolving. Just like with these $100-whatever million video games, you can only keep making excuses and tweaking and patching, and now we'll try DLC, now we'll try the, you know, you can only patch it and tweak it so long before it's just irrelevant in the current marketplace.
But then you have
like what you're saying,
you have Call of Duty every year that outsells everything, and it does practically nothing different.
Guitar Hero used to be the same way.
That doesn't apply to everything else.
It's the same. It's the same thing as film. I mean, you go to the movies now, you're either going to get a rom-com or a blockbuster action, whatever, or some kind of horror movie.
It's a homogenization of the industry.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is, you're only going to get these $100 million movies that are all promoted by the same people. None of these movies ever come out within 3 weeks of each other on purpose.
It's a conspiracy.
From competing theaters.
Yeah, Hollywood only releases a couple hundred movies.
And so
they set it up perfectly like that.
All of the independent movies, all of the anything really that you used to be able to go to a theater and watch a movie like, you know, the French,
like a Paul Rudd movie.
No, that's still in theaters.
No, I know.
But I'm saying, you honestly, we all like it, but you could have gone to the theaters and watched Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
Love that movie, baby.
A movie like that doesn't come in theaters anymore. It just doesn't.
Well, Tim Burton used to make movies. Now
Pee-wee does come in theaters, though.
We have a show title.
The
other last thing I was going to say was like how we were just talking about Activision and all these big giant corporations, like, you know, it's all about the bean counters now. And we saw a 4-part documentary from the late 90s on YouTube. Go to YouTube and search for, what was it called?
Once Upon Atari.
Once Upon Atari.
Okay.
It was made by
Howard Scott Warshaw.
It is talking to all of the original people who worked at Atari.
It's about 15 years old.
Yeah, it's from the late 90s. So, and they were all saying, like, yeah, I used to come to work and I could dream up any kind of game I wanted, and I would sit there and I would program it. And, you know, like we would get like Warlords and 3D Tic-Tac-Toe and like all these crazy kind of games.
And that's what you have on iPad now.
Exactly. And they said once Atari got big and the suits came in and the bean counters came in,
the suits,
they would run off lists and say, you know, we're the marketing MBA guys. Here's a list of game titles we've come up with that we think are cool, that will sell well. Pick a game title from that list and make a game of it.
So basically making a game.
And all the programmers are like, we don't work that. We make up our own games out of our imagination. No. These are the cool, trending
people are
words
going to
right
want
now.
To play these in their ski lodges.
Right. People want to play, yes, like Rock Fight.
Rock Fight.
Because rocks are cool and fighting is cool and people want to, and they're like,
GoBots had
Go
that
bots, yeah.
Man, Rock yeah. Lords.
But it was the same, and from then on, it was like, it was a different company. Yeah, different attitude, and it's the same thing. When you have an environment like iOS,
it's cyclical.
You and me, and we can sit here and dream up any kind of crazy game, but then once the marketing people get up, oh no, you can't make it, that's not going to sell. You can't make artwork like that. It changes everything. It changes the creative process.
Yeah. Those lawyers get involved.
You know,
no, I'm serious.
Though. No. The lowered bar of entry of a system like iOS is great, but then I dare anybody to go to the Xbox Live Indie Marketplace and look at 90% of the stuff on there.
Yeah.
And I have a sense. As optimistic as I am, I have a slight sense of doubt whenever I do that and I see like 500 vibrating controller games and dating simulators.
Hey, the girls need their games too.
Look,
Trailer Park.
Yeah. I'm not saying
dating.
I'm not saying
that Move controller.
I'm not saying. Listen,
what does it look like?
I'm not saying people don't take shortcuts or people don't take the easy way out or want to get rich quick, but you have an environment where you can literally dream up anything versus being told that kind of a sprite isn't going to sell.
Yeah.
You have to make it look hip and cool.
There definitely needs to be a balance. And on that note, let us move on.
Move on. Yeah, move on. Move
we done yet?
What are we playing? Let's really quickly talk about the games we're playing now.
Let's start with Greg.
Greg, our esteemed guest. You must be playing something.
Genesis.
What is it? Commodore 64. Yes.
Atari 400.
It is more the frustration in getting old games to work in certain ways that I want them to work. On
tell us about your RGB trouble, sir.
RGB. It just
on a Sony HD TV. I blame
you,
the
it's
HD
the damn
TV.
Sony.
Well, let's talk about the cause. It's that 240p resolution, right, over the HD
of the old console.
Yeah. I do have a CRT television before I get burned at the stake for not having a CRT television for classic games. I do have it. However, I do like to play the stuff on the HD TV. Shoot me.
You're off the podcast.
I know. Shoot me.
Most of it works, right?
Yes.
I'm shooting you right now in the chest.
So, the real quickly, the problem I have is the Sega Genesis and the 32X Master, they had the worst composite video output in history. I don't know what it was.
It had something to do with the blast processor.
Must have been.
Couldn't handle it.
It was terrible.
It keeps blasting.
It was too much. Yeah, it was just too much blasting.
It gets in the way of the progressors.
It's terrible.
Wait, I have a. Can you actually open up the Genesis and mod it to take out the blast processor?
No, I think it's a.
You need a wizard to do that. Actually,
I know.
No, I'm a certified blast processor technician. Okay. All right. I got my degree
in blast processing.
Yeah. So it's like, essentially, blast processing is like Lyme disease. Like, once you have it,
yes.
You can only Chicken suppress pox. It. It's like you can only suppress
herpes.
It. You can't remove it.
Herpes. It's more like herpes, I guess. Anyway, so it's unwatchable. It's just so soft, the picture. You can't play it. So I wanted to get a SCART cable, and somebody here recommended getting a SCART cable that would get the RGB out of the
It does
console.
Get it out.
It does come out. It comes out. All right, so here's the problem. In the United States, there's no such thing as SCART. We never had it. It was in Europe. It was in Japan, sort of.
Yeah, but we had better Hertz on our TVs.
Those darn Europeans.
So.
Yes. Hurts you drive.
That's right.
Yeah. They didn't shave their armpits and they had SCART cables in Europe.
And there goes half the audience.
This is the other half.
One person. So we now have one listener. Our one French
it's gonna be me.
Was like, Sacre bleu!
Mon Dieu! All right, so you have to. The only way to get the RGB without modding it, and I hate modding systems. I'm very anal about that.
What are you, Beavis and Butthead? What is it?
Awkward.
It's like anal.
Family Guy. Is Joe expecting like a totally professional discussion here?
You're,
you're not going to get paid.
All right, but, anyway.
By the way, we've been doing this podcasting thing for a while. Yeah. You know what we've been doing here?
Exactly.
So quiet.
Okay.
Let me finish. So you have to get the RGB out. You got to use the SCART cable. Can't SCART cable doesn't go in anything. So now you got to convert it. So I got one of those $50 eBay converters, converts it to component, which should be able to go into the TV fine.
Sorry.
So
is that related to Rob's comment?
Yeah. Sorry.
All right, we'll edit that out.
No,
of course, not. So you got to put the SCART. So it's got to go in the component. So here I am. I'm all excited. I got all these SCART cables. I got the component converter.
Picture him like.
It didn't cost that much. I was like, finally. So I plug it in. I plug in the Genesis. I also got. These exist. There is a cable that, you know, the crossover cable that goes to the 32X and the Genesis. Mm-hmm. I have a Model 1 Genesis.
Right.
So they actually make them where it's one cable and it has an offshoot that you could plug into the headphone jack on the Model 1.
Oh, yeah.
To
so you get stereo sound. It makes a difference.
Yeah. Stereo only came out of the headphone jack.
I thought
jack,
the original Genesis
the
said high-definition graphics.
Yeah, they turned off the high definition.
It outputs in HD.
Yeah.
All right, so you plug in.
This is I'm trying to realize this.
So you plug in.
I'm trying to get to HD graphics from the Genesis.
HDMI
they don't want
out.
To come
yeah.
out. They're hiding. They don't
right.
want to. Why is it not working? Yeah.
So yeah. I plugged in the Genesis, and I turn it on. It works fine. And I don't need the scan line. I know some of these people, they need scan lines. God forbid they don't have scan lines. I'm like, whatever.
Are you one of those people?
There's about I don't care people. About the scan lines.
Oh, no.
Looks fine.
There goes the other half of the
It looks
the one
fine.
Techie was watching us.
So I have the
sucker in blue.
Genesis. The Genesis works fine. All right. Here, I'm feeling like I'm in business now.
AKA Mega Drive.
Yes, right.
Who are no longer watching, so who cares?
All right.
So I take out the master system, I plug that in, all of a sudden nothing. Black screen. What the hell? That doesn't work. I get the Super Nintendo out. Plug that in, nothing. The hell? So now
it doesn't have high definition graphics.
So now I'm like, all right, well, I'm one for three here. This is not working out. I do have. I wound up getting a modded N64. Not that that really helps much, and that worked. So I'm like, well, this makes no sense.
Two for four.
The Super Nintendo doesn't work. Master System. Now I do have an EverDrive flash card, and I plugged that into the Genesis, and I was able to load Master System ROMs through the Genesis. But there would be like a couple of seconds where it wouldn't pick the picture up right away, and then it would come on. So I don't know what the hell to do with this damn thing. So, all right.
The
so now,
cool story.
So now I can't get into the components. So now I'm on the internet and I'm looking for some other method to convert the SCART to get it onto the TV.
You have a daisy chain of all these like bizarre.
Now the problem is they have SCART to HDMI converters. They're like $60. They're like Hong Kong specials, whatever. Whatever.
The Hong Kong special, that ain't a good sign.
I got a Hong Kong special once.
Thailand.
They weren't sold to me by Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Figured right out.
So
why didn't you go that route?
Well, the problem is those things, when they upconvert it to HDMI to 720, it stretches it on the whole screen. It doesn't stay 4x3. I must have 4x3. Cannot stretch.
Your TV, you can't squish.
Nah, you can't. It doesn't. You can zoom in. You can stretch it, but you can't go down.
What if you take a sword and chop the sides of the TV?
No. Well, then I'm gonna see half of the zoom picture. You
I don't
that.
Think you'd be seeing anything. No, but yeah, the issue is that I think
it's
a lot
the 240.
A lot of systems output the 240p as the resolution, and these modern TVs.
Only
it's like a coin toss. My guess was that
maybe the Genesis is outputting a little bit stronger signal, and the Super Nintendo is outputting
guess
a little
is that
weaker.
Greg just doesn't give love to his games.
I do.
Love.
You know how if you don't have a signal going into the TV, it's black, right? If you have a weak signal, it doesn't know, so it's just showing black, right?
Well, regardless, it's a problem because this isn't exactly something like the spec. These specs aren't going to be on the box when you buy a television. No. So it's like, unless you know somebody who has that TV, what I mean? It's like,
SCART cables, but only for Sega Genesis, not Super Nintendo. Yeah.
So apparently there are boxes, there are video processors that will process it into like VGA or HDMI or something. And supposedly...
Modulators, right?
No, not demodulators. No, these are...
Up converters?
True video upscalers. Okay. And they work fine, supposedly, but they're like $300-$400. I can't justify it, but by the time you pay for all
these wires, you're already $400 in the hole.
No, I'm not. All right. They didn't cost that much. All
right. Adventures in RGB to be continued.
And then every good upscaler is in Japan.
That's right. I got mine.
Oh, yeah.
Why don't you get me one?
I'd spend $400 on it.
Exactly. It is ridiculous. Look,
that's a lot of money.
That is, actually.
It
doesn't look good, though.
Listen, when you're laying in bed dying at age 90, are you going to really be like, God, I spent that $400 on the...
You know what?
It's the principle.
You know what makes Genesis games look really good on my Bravia?
Yeah.
Emulating them on the Wii.
No.
They look super
virtual
crisp.
Console.
No,
the emulator.
It must be original hardware.
The other technique.
The jailbroken Wii with all the homebrew shit.
But I have that too. The virtual console.
They look good.
Right?
Yeah, I mean, paying for the legit Genesis games or putting an
I'm
entire
just saying if there's someone
full
who doesn't
set
know
of ROMs
how,
on a 2K game.
But if someone doesn't know how or...
All you have to do is...
I'm just saying it looks good, right? The virtual console.
In order to jailbreak your Wii, here's what you do. You look at it and you go... Jailbreak, and it goes, it's jailbroken.
But,
that's it.
But you
need Wii Speak. So
Thin Lizzy plays over
but
the radio.
But you need Wii Speak to hear you.
Yeah, you have to say, "Is that even me, Mario?" And then it goes, "What do you want? Jailbreak." Okay.
So to answer your question, I'm not playing anything at the moment. You're just pissed off.
What are you playing, Rob?
Zelda Ocarina of Time 3DS. Star Fox 64 3DS.
Did you find the Ocarina of Time?
Sure.
Okay.
That's
the goal of the game? To find the Ocarina of Time?
Yeah. That's you beat the game once you... You have to find it in the maze. And then you
Do you own any other games?
Yes. I was revisiting F-Zero on the Super Nintendo, which was a classic.
You stole my answer.
I hadn't played it in like a decade.
It's on the Wii U now, right now, the F-Zero for the Super Nintendo version. They have it on sale for 30 cents. Yeah.
30 cents?
Yeah, you can play off TV on the pad and stuff too, which is really neat.
Nice.
Yeah,
cool.
They're gradually selling like a lot of classic games.
You know what I miss?
So.
F-Zero, awesome game on the Super Nintendo. Awesome game on the N64, awesome game on the GameCube, and then no Wii version.
But where is it? The last one that came out was F-Zero Climax.
Climax.
All right, Frank's turn. Your turn.
I'm reaching
the climax.
It's called F-Zero Climax that came out in 2004 for the Game Boy Advance. That's the last one.
Bayonetta sued them, but Bayonetta actually sued F-Zero. She came out and she said, I have all the climaxes in this generation. And that's it.
I'm an old school gamer, so I tend more toward the old school stuff. Frank.
I have been playing Platinum Games, New Masterpiece, Metal Gear Rising Revengeance.
It's a very good
game. Holy shit, Platinum Games is the best developer of this generation. Their attention to detail is second to none. Every art asset, every character model, every texture, every animation cycle in a Platinum game is like pitch perfect.
Yes.
What else have they made?
Well, they used to be Clover, so they made God Hand, Okami, Bayonetta. Well, that was as Platinum Games Incorporated. Mad World on Wii.
Cool.
Anarchy Reigns, and most recently this game, Metal Gear Rising. And it's like the baby of Bayonetta and the Metal Gear game. Do you have it? You played it yet?
I played the demo.
The demo is representative of the game. Yeah. It's fantastic. It's just, it's that over-the-top, stupid, crazy action that I want in an action game in this generation. And it's the first Metal Gear game that does not drone on for hours about, like, war. And
philosophizing.
The philosophers. Yeah. But yet, it manages to get all of that Kojima-esque stuff in there. You get codec conversations. You're talking about modern military, about the way that, you know, it affects the public. It's got all that great Metal Gear stuff, but man, it gets through it. It's like, fuck, let's just get it out there, do it really fast, and oh my God, it's fantastic.
Yay. Is it along the lines of like a No More Heroes, like,
yes,
super
absolutely
exaggerated?
In the first level, practically in the tutorial, you fight a Metal Gear Ray as Raiden. It attacks you, you grab its leg, and you throw it down the street. And then you leap into the air with your sword, and you cut it into like 100 pieces.
So it's No More Hero.
It's pretty much
which is a good thing.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah, it's fantastic. It's fast, it's stylish. It's that Japanese hallmark of the stylish action game.
Yes.
Some American studios have done it, like the God of War games are that stylish action where, you know, it'll stop and go into like a kind of a cinematic thing as you're doing your moves. But they push it. They push it to a level of absurdity that's just, it's fantastic. You guys.
Can you pick up a piece of poop and write on the wall with it?
What?
No.
That's
Duke Nukem. That's
forever.
No.
I didn't know you could even do that in Duke Nukem.
But
you do South Park.
But
forget it.
There's a reference in Metal Gear Rising. It's not a poop writing on the wall, but there's a direct reference to Vanilla Ice's Ninja Rap.
Go Ninja, go Ninja, go!
Why?
Go Ninja, go Ninja, go!
That's crazy.
I can't explain it.
They know
it's
that
just,
in Japan?
I know, right?
They know that everywhere.
I think Japan actually is just getting
nah, they got the single last week.
It was just released in Japanese theaters. So
Vanilla Ice is huge in Japan.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
He does a lot of home improvement stuff there. That's what I've been playing.
Yeah. Same thing. I've been playing. I've legitimately been playing F-Zero on my Super.
Copycat.
Yeah,
it's true.
Are you
playing,
spying on me?
No.
You've actually been playing it in Rob's house.
Yeah.
Rob like goes to the bathroom.
When I'm sleeping,
you pop up from behind his couch.
I was.
And then
playing,
you take the controller and you.
Is that why it was my controller was warm?
Yeah. I was playing F-Zero on my S card to component on Super Nintendo.
And it worked? How does it look? Good?
It looks great.
Perfect.
Yeah. You have to see it. Any you know.
I'm serious. It looks good.
No, it looks fine. You know, it's like. Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
What else?
That's it, just F-Zero?
Yeah, well, F-Zero. Yeah, F-Zero.
You have to give a different game, because you just said F-Zero.
I did play Super Mario World.
I played that too. Come on, he is in my house,
I did the 96 exits.
Yeah. Isn't that a good feeling when you get all
96? I got that SD2S NES, and it's just, there's so many things. I think I just keep plinking around with that.
What else? One more. That none of us have said.
We played Space Team at the last NAVA.
Yes.
Oh my God, if you have an iPad, go to the App Store, download Space Team. This is our last thing, then we're done for the show. And then find somebody else who has an iPad and tell them to download Space Team and get in the same room with them. Actually, get four people with four iPads. It's free, and it's like a spaceship terminal, and you have a limited amount of time, and all the things on your terminal are very bizarre switches and knobs, like the defambulator and the warp drive bubble and all these kind of things that you maybe kind of hear in Star Trek The Next Generation or a Douglas Adams novel. And it gives instructions on the top of the screen, and you call out your instructions, and everybody has instructions simultaneously. So you're shouting out, defambulate the defibrillator, and on somebody else's screen, there might be a defambulate button. And they're calling out to set the warp nozzle to 2, and you might have a switch, but the twist is, you might have the thing on your own screen that you're calling out, and you have to like check your screen, because you might be screaming, caramelize the onions.
But you're the only one who can do that.
Onions, and your screen has the caramelize onions button. Right. And it's just this crazy white noise of people shouting spaceship instructions at each other. Cool. And the rounds like get harder and faster, and the things like slime comes out, and you have to wipe it off on the screen, and you have to shake when there's an asteroid field.
It's how many people can play up to?
4 simultaneously, or you can buy, I think, a $1.99 add-on. And 8 people can play simultaneously.
Wow, nice.
So that's it.
So it's like a comlinks.
Hey, people come to the Nava meeting and approach me. I mean, by the end of this year, I'm going to have at least 4 iPads. You need an iOS device to play.
On that note, thanks for hanging with us on the 10th episode. We'll see you next time. Godspeed.
Bye-bye.